So this is the extra podcast edition of the year of 2017 and the stories that stood out with Chuck Marone, our conservative commentator, and Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator.
Let me just start this by saying, you know, we just finished a segment on sexual harassment, et cetera. You know, Aaron and I do this because we love chatting with each other. We also really like you. I wouldn't be here. You know, I wouldn't be here.
Well, I don't think you don't like me.
No, but I wouldn't be here if you weren't like a fun person to do this with, hang out with.
Yeah.
And I hope, you know, I kind of feel like we would love to do this anyway, like once a month, get together and just chat. We do it in front of a microphone, which makes it kind of more fun.
So it's not so much about me. It's what it projects off the air.
Yeah.
That the female who's hosting it is not involved in the conversation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But that's not what this is. You know, this is, you guys are the guys that you are. I want to hear your opinions. I want to hear your thoughts on the topics that we present to you. So that's where I've come to realize, like, I mean, and I've liked it all along, but, and we've gotten great response, by the way.
That's
especially
fantastic.
Last month, we got a lot more response to the political party conversation. I think a lot of people learned a lot from that, and a lot of people went to this section, the extra podcast edition, so that's kind of cool. But so where do we take up this conversation? There's stuff you want to tie up?
I had said maybe predictions.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Looking ahead. I don't know. Those, that's kind of a cliche, you know, like McLaughlin group kind of thing.
I think the Vikings will win the Super Bowl, the Timberwolves will win the NBA Finals, and the Twins will win the World Series.
I cannot believe I forgot this when I talked about Wonder Woman. The Minnesota Lynx won this year.
Oh,
you guys,
yeah.
How amazing is that? And Maya Moore just won a Sports Illustrated, like the...
Yeah.
Player of the year or some sort of great thing that wasn't just the female player of the year. It was
right. The most
thing.
I think the most successful professional sports franchise in Minnesota history is the Minnesota Lynx.
And for me, it's significant because it's the only sport it's the only professional sport I've ever been to in my life, and it's fantastic.
Okay, so, cool.
There we go.
Well, the Lynx have the best chance, I think, of repeating as
no,
any of Chuck's.
They lose in off years. They win every other.
Oh, is that what it is? Goes, okay, yeah. Well. I don't know about Chuck's predictions as far as our sports teams. I've been abused by Minnesota sports history, like the rest of us. I was spoiled when I was a kid and the Twins won those two World Series. I thought that's how it would always be, and of course it's not. But so looking ahead, I think there's a few things. One is the politics of the next year.
It's an election year.
It's a midterm. Normally, you'd say midterms are interesting to people like us, maybe less interesting to what I would call normal people, who have other things that they talk about besides politics. I think this midterm will be of elevated interest compared to your typical midterm. Typically, the president gets in office 2 years later, his party suffers losses. That is typical historically. I'm looking ahead, and I have a hard time predicting, however, that Democrats get Congress.
I do too, and it's strange because you look at like where the energy is today, and the energy is clearly with a now, you know, mobilized and active and passionate left. People who kind of sleptwalk through the Hillary Clinton campaign because they felt, you know, we're going to win this one. We've had this competent president for 8 years. Of course, the country's not going to throw a brick through the wall and just, you know, blow the place up. And then the country threw a brick through the wall and blew the place up. And so you have this kind of awakening amongst the left. I think the question is, will that translate into...
Where do they go,
is
my question. Because right now, being a liberal... And by the way, I'm the kind of liberal who likes to watch the world. I don't necessarily... I used to be more active in politics than I am now. I tend to view my work as writing now and observing and learning and sharing is what I do now. But I know a lot of liberals, and I know a lot of liberals on the spectrum, I guess you'd say. And I mean the political spectrum.
I know a lot on the spectrum too.
But. Yeah, it's a different thing. But I mean, they're upset, they're motivated, but the problem we have in this country, and I think it's true of the right as well, is we have real problems, but we don't have a present means of seeking change in any kind of quick or responsive way. I think a lot of liberals will be upset about Trump. If they vote, when they vote, they'll vote against Trump. The Republicans will probably have a little resurgence. Look, the Democrats are going to take over Congress. We got to prevent that because who knows what they might do. And there's going to be that going on. But we have a gerrymandered Congress. We have a constitutional system that only a third of the Senate is up. Most of them are Democrats. All of these different means, I think, will conspire. The Democrats will certainly make gains. They may even make significant gains. But because of the system we've got and the fact that the White House will be held by President Trump and the Republicans, presuming he makes it through the next year, I just don't see much more than more fighting after the 2018 election. And we might, in fact, then be stuck with a stymied Congress. It's funny because Congress is entirely held by Republicans and there's a Republican in the White House, and yet we're still stymied, which kind of tells you the problem is that even when one of these parties does get in control of, and it was true when the Democrats took over in 2008.
There is no policy fix for this stuff. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so I think people are more engaged and are really upset. I think young people are really, really will be shaped by this world in which Donald Trump was their president and Barack Obama and Donald Trump in succession because of the contrast between those figures. I don't mean, obviously, I think one is better than the other, but I mean, like, just who they are and the kinds of campaigns that got them in office and the kinds of promises that were made to get them in office and then what ultimately happened. It's very disillusioning, and I think has nowhere to go. One of the comments I was going to make last program about the women in the workplace discussion we had was that what President Trump represented, I think, was an enormous amount of pressure put into a system. I think Obama might have been that too. And that pressure is into this old steam unit full of these old nasty pipes and fittings. And that pressure is building and building, and the little dial, little gauge is pegged out. And at some point, these fittings are going to pop, and these pipes are popping. I think women speaking up for themselves in the workplace is an example of a burst pipe. We can't take it anymore, and we won't. And I think there's a lot of issues like that, financial issues, political issues.
But I think Trump is the result of that, not the cause of that.
Yeah, but he winning and the people who put him in there and got him there
racked up the steam.
Built the pressure. And the fact that that desire to elect him was even in the population is, in fact, the underlying pressure I'm talking about. And that these pressures are going to start popping some of these old fittings from this old steam unit from 100 years ago.
I feel like, in terms of a prediction, I think that the Democrats should, on paper, make huge gains this fall. I do not think they will. And I'll give you the reason. I think at the end of the day, there aren't policy prescriptions that people are willing to do. I think part of the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party is saying, it's the same with the Donald Trump wing of the Republican Party, at least during the campaign. And I would point more towards like maybe even the Rand Paul kind of libertarian. There's a sense that the whole thing needs to be blown up and redone. And on the Democratic side, the Bernie's, you know, we need Medicare for all. It's not a small policy change. We're not talking about two people, you know, I want seven, I want four, let's meet and do 5.5. You know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about we're either going to be one or zero. It's like binary. And those things, it's a little like pre-Civil War. Are we going to have slavery or not? These are not things that are compromised out. And so we're at this point where that's essentially where our election is. And when you look at just the makeup of conservatives and liberals, I'm going to give a book recommendation now. The best book I read this year was called The Righteous Mind, written by a behavioral moral psychologist named Jonathan Haidt. He is a left of center psychologist who studies moral behavior. And I think he's done the best job of describing the left-right paradigm in this country. And one of the things that he says is that people on the right of the spectrum value just innately in-group authority. They value loyalty. And that's why you see things like Roy Moore in Alabama, who by all accounts is an absolutely despicable person. Yet what happens? We're in an election, in-group loyalty kicks in, Republicans fall in line, and even though they really shouldn't have the votes to elect someone like that, they're going to. Why? Because Democrats don't value in-group loyalty. They don't value falling in the line. They value experience, and they value free thought, and they value expression more. And from a psychological standpoint, what you look at is a party that has a high propensity to eat its young, to like infight, to fight itself, and has a hard time organizing in the same kind of way. Unless there's a unifying figure like a Barack Obama who can come in and kind of, you know, address a whole bunch of things.
Can be all things to all the groups.
Yes. Yeah. You have, and I don't see that emerging on the Democratic side. Instead, you've got Al Franken, who really, people 2 months ago were talking about Al Franken as a future presidential candidate, someone who could span, get the very far left people, but yet was kind of Minnesota enough, kind of pragmatic enough to not, you know, freak out the crazies. You know, I think that you have a party now like eating its own. And I'm not saying Al Franken shouldn't be gone, but I'm just saying like that's not a thing the Republicans would do. And because of that, they're likely to win more elections.
Yeah, I think that's, and actually that's one of the arguments that you see now is that in a couple of the, John Conyers being the other example in Congress, the sexual harassment cases have resulted in Democrats accused of things resigning. But the irony, as Franken pointed out in his speech when he resigned, is that we just got out of a campaign where the president of the United States admitted on tape to doing things arguably a lot worse.
A lot worse.
Than, yeah, than any of the things certainly Al Franken was accused of doing. And yet there is absolutely no recourse. And as Sarah Huckabee, the press secretary, said in her press conference for the president, what's the difference between the two? They said the difference is Al Franken admitted it and the president didn't.
Right.
And the amount of evidence is the same, is arguably even more so for the president, because his was recorded, it was a confession on tape that he tried to explain away later. But the fact that he's still sitting, and he won't resign certainly not over that, that is just a weird thing. And yet, as a, speaking as a Democrat, so to speak, as a liberal, looking at that, I'm like, I know that that's better for politics to do what Trump is doing, to do what Roy Moore is doing. I know in the past, Democrats have done this in their political history. But,
well, Bill Clinton being like a prime example.
Yeah. But and it's good. You mentioned Clinton, and I think about that. And here's where I was. Like, I defended Clinton when I was younger, but I defended him. And I use all the same things that you hear, which is, oh, I don't believe those women. They're just trying to, and the sex doesn't matter. It's not as important as their policies. And I said all
their
those
policies
things
are good for women. Right.
Yeah, the policies are good for women. So
that always used to be the never inoculation.
Never mind their behavior. Never mind that he obviously has a long history of this kind of behavior. That's his business, his wife's business, not our business. I did all of that. When the stuff came out about Franken, who, and I got to just point out, I had written a column about his book and about Al Franken and his political transformation from a comedian to a senator, and it was all set to run. I had written it like 3 weeks in advance, and it was sitting in my queue to be sent off to my weekly column, and I had to pull it because that was the day the Tweeden story came out.
Yeah. And I feel bad for you because those things are a lot of work.
They are, but that's not, but
and I was supposed to
that's
talk,
not the point I was trying to make.
But I was supposed to talk to him that morning that
really?
Came out.
Wow. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, anyway, I had all of that ready to go. And when the moment came and that came out, and perhaps it's because of everything else that's happened this year and all the conversation we had in that last episode, I went to go defend Al Franken, a person I've supported and who I like and who I've met, and I met his wife. She's great. I like these people. And I went to go defend Al Franken in my mind before I said a word. I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring the words out of my mouth to say, look at, well, maybe she's a right winger just doing this for politics. I couldn't do it psychologically.
Yeah, the world's changed.
You know, but the thing is, for a lot of people, they don't have that hang up. A lot of people are very tribal, and I think we saw it in the Democratic Party because it was not, Democrats are eating their own, but a lot of Democrats didn't want Franken to resign. I'm hearing from them because I said he should. So this is going on, and that, I mean, among other reasons is why, and I'm not saying this because I want it to happen. I think I would love to have at least a Democratic House so that some of these very real charges and things regarding the president can be at least heard in a way that's not like trying to overshout the majority in the Congress when they're not going to ever give it the light of day. I think that's important. But on the other side, I'm like, I have a hard time knowing where this is going to go, which is why my prediction is more like chaos. I also would predict, and the end of the year, I'm mostly me talking on this one, sorry. At the end of the year here, I think we're going to have something big in foreign policy over the next year. We have the Olympics coming in the early part of the year in South Korea. I cannot imagine that going without, we have the Russians banned,
yeah,
because of illegal substances in their programs. Just imagine like how big a deal, and I know like the boycotts in Moscow and LA Olympics when the Soviets boycotted us and we boycotted them, how big a deal that was politically at the time. Now the Russians are kicked out for
doping, cheating.
They don't like that, of course. They would dispute that charge. And then you've got the United States, the other big power, or of course Russia is not quite the same as it was, but you got the United States coming in there as this adversarial nation with North Korea just over the border. I'm not saying that their nuclear war is going to break out, but that Olympics is going to be a touch point that I don't think we even understand
yet. Let me put it this way, because I think that Donald Trump's presidency, there's reasons for him to want it to become a foreign policy presidency now. And I think that that's a natural way for it to go. Let me put this context in. And I say this as like the conservative patriot. I think America's never been weaker post-World War II, vis-a-vis the other, you know, in comparison to other countries in the world. Part of that is the way we have weakened ourselves. We've lost some of our moral authority as leaders of the world because of some of our actions and things that we've done. We've also lost our kind of economic moral authority by the way we have abused our economic system and abused our position as the world's reserve currency. At the same time, you've also seen other countries that ended World War II in desperate straits are no longer there. I mean, China is a global superpower. There's no arguing against that. Japan, India, Russia, Brazil, these are places that are, you know, serious players now. And we are on the verge of having a true multipolar world with, and I'll say this as like a person who has never been a Donald Trump supporter, one of the most like infantile reactionary foreign policies that we've ever pondered. Foreign policy by tweet. I mean, we're taking on, he's tweeting about the British prime minister. Like, do we have a closer ally than the Brits? I mean, maybe Canada. I don't know. But I mean, throwing pot shots at the conservative British prime minister.
Essentially from his own side.
Like what are we doing? Like, this is infantile. And so to me, the idea that we could, in this shifting world where people are testing America, where, you know, there's all this kind of like void, that someone could step into that and that we could overreact is to me highly plausible. I want to ask, and this is the kind of prediction thing that I was in. I would like to know what you think is going to happen in the 8th in terms of the House race and the governorship. If we will wind up in Minnesota with two Democrats or Republicans or what? And I am I putting you on a spot?
Yeah.
Because I will say in the 8th, I said last time in the run with Stu Mills, who, by the way, tweeted that he'd considering a Senate run if Al Franken steps out, which I think is hilarious.
I hope he does.
I said that that Rick Nolan is the only Democrat that I've ever voted for, and I voted for him in the race against Stu Mills. I like Rick Nolan. I know him personally. I know Stu Mills personally. That explains my vote. You know, I think he's a good guy. Rick Nolan, just to clarify. But I think it's interesting because I don't think that this is a deep blue district any longer. I think that if you had two new candidates, not an incumbent, but just two fresh candidates, I think it would be an uphill battle for the DFL to win this seat. I think that there's a better than even chance that the 8th District is represented by a new Republican a year from now.
I'm not ready to say that Nolan will lose, because I think he could win. And I think in a normal year, he would win. Him being a fairly well-regarded, well-liked congressman who might outperform and has in the past outperformed his party's index in the district. Normally you'd say, well, that's a safe bet, Democratic year, or at least Democratic-leaning year. Nolan is safe, safer, not certainly the most vulnerable member of the House, which is what they're calling him now. I think the thing that's so different for Nolan is the fact that he's got the left flank battle with Leah Pfeiffer in the endorsement battle. And then presuming Nolan outlasts Pfeiffer, which seems logical, where do Pfeiffer supporters go, especially if they have a third party option in the general? There are a lot of liberals just because of the mining bills and the Republican, essentially totally Republican originated deregulation bills, nullification bills that Nolan has supported, that has just totally outraged certainly a lot of liberals on the DFL side. Will they come around and say Nolan's good on everything else, we'll let him have those environmental votes, or will they go to that third party? Kind of depends. I think Nolan is more vulnerable than the Democratic candidate, whoever that might be, for governor. I think the DFL holds the governor's race.
Do you?
I don't know if they get the legislature back, but I think that they hold the governor's race.
It's fascinating because I feel like we are in the governor's race, and both parties at this point, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, because you're actually deeper in this than I am. I feel like we are running the B squad on both teams.
It's a bunch of, I won't say, I don't think the DF, I think the Republican squad is a little weaker in terms of profile. I mean, there are a number of larger name Republicans that could be running that aren't running. And certainly on the Republican side, I've not heard of as many of them. On the Democratic side, I think there are a few legislators, people running that normally wouldn't get to be on the stage. But on the other hand, look, we got a congressman, a state auditor, former speaker. I mean, there's some, at least some people with some higher clout that I think are running for governor on the DFL side. I think, though, from the standpoint of your non-political person, though, that the people aren't as well known, and that there's so many candidates that it kind of has a dilution of effect on who might be the next governor. I don't think people will really tune into that until those parties make their decisions.
Does the House flip or not?
State House?
Yeah. I don't have a feel for it. To me, the momentum, again, is...
I was so wrong about the last one that I don't trust myself.
Here's the interesting thing. I think the political momentum is on the DFL side, but the demographics are not. They're really not. They will win the Metro by 80-20, mm-hmm. You know, 85-15, and I think they'll lose outstate Minnesota 60-40. And I think they will wind up with more votes in the state will be cast DFL, but more representation will be Republican.
And that's happened before. It's happened in the legislature in recent years even. And that's what you're seeing, not just in Minnesota, but all over. When the urban areas are 80% Democratic, and overwhelmingly so, and then you have a lot of 55-45 districts around the state that are the rural districts or exurban districts, it's a weird thing, but that's kind of how people are settling and how it's going. And it's only going to, I think, what did I see in 20 years, 70% of the American population will be represented by 30 senators.
Yeah.
Because of the growth of urban states.
It's funny because people are, urban advocates are so up in arms over this. And I'm like, this is the, you go back and read like the Federalist Papers. I mean, this was the debate they were having. Do we have, you know, proportional representation based on population, or do we have it based on geography? Mm-hmm. And they said, you know what? We can't really figure this out. There's pros and cons to each. Let's do both, and let's make sure that everything we pass is okay in both ways. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. And I think it's not a bad system.
I think it's a little different when you're dealing with 300 million people as opposed to
maybe
a few million people. And the difference is not quite, and the geographic spread of the United States and what it's become.
But now you're arguing for a constitutional convention and total electoral reform. And I would be for that too, but I don't know if it would turn out the way that people would want it.
Yeah, could be interesting.
Do you have a prediction, Heidi, for next year?
Oh, I don't know. Another year of Dig Deep, I hope.
Yeah.
I think I'm in. Smarmy? I'm in.
Yeah.
I think I'm in. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It has been a year. I think we started in January last year.
No, we did start in January. And thank you for doing this.
And this was your idea. This was you helped make this happen.
Yeah.
So.
No, something we've been wanting to do for a long time. You guys make it easy. And I would love for people to kind of send us some topics they think that you guys should dig into too, and you know whether or not you choose them.
We've kind of worked through a lot of our pet topics now, so we need some new content.
And I would not be opposed to at some point having like a guest in here too.
Yeah,
that had something that we could chat with them if we had an expert on something who wanted to come in and talk. I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
I do appreciate when you forward me the emails, the feedback that we get from people. And I will tell you, I run into people all the time who listen to Dig Deep on podcasts. They listen to it live on the air. And the most common feedback that I get is that when you introduce me as a conservative, this is what people say to me. They go, they introduce you as a conservative. I'm like, I'm not going to like this guy. And then I listen and I'm like, I kind of agree with him a little bit, and it makes people upset. So
good. I thought you were going to say I said the word differently or something.
No. But the feedback that I get is that people say, you know, I really don't want to like you, but I wind up thinking that you make some good points. I don't agree with everything you say. You know, you always got to get that.
You're right, of course.
But everyone's got to say that.
Well, I do have a prediction. I think that we are cooking this up for August, hopefully still the week after the primaries in Minnesota for governor. We are going to have a rural-only debate here in Grand Rapids, and the parties have agreed to that.
Between the gubernatorial candidates.
Yeah, and we will, you know, we've got a lot of people on board. Lakeland Public Television is going to broadcast it live as well, and we'll have Dennis Wyman there, and then the three of us will have the opportunity to ask questions. And it's a 600-seat facility plus. I think it might even be more than that.
Yep. Yeah.
And for me, one of my things is I just want people to get involved. I want them to show up at these things, and I want them to see people for real, not just on social media, and see how they act and see how that goes.
Right.
And so hopefully that's going to come to fruition. It's a sort of a new thing for me to tackle and organize, and people are behind it. So we're going to do it.
Cool.
There you go.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, you guys.
Now all I have to do is lose 25 pounds before my high school reunion.
When's your heist?
Summer. We don't know yet.
Okay. That's right. We're almost exactly 10 years apart.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It's not so bad, really.
Yeah. We won't say which way.
I was sitting here thinking, which way?
Yeah.
That's good. I think I figured that out.
Yeah, that's good.
All right.